Welcome to the Sunday Night Radio Show podcast of the Leisureman. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. What do you got tonight for me, Pearl?
Oh, we got a lot of NBA talk. We talked to Kurt Heelan, who is at the game. Then we have Joe Giglio from Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio, WIP.
Nice.
He's going to have the latest on Brian Colangelo. Will Brian Colangelo, the Sixers GM, survive his Twitter mishap or his alleged Twitter mishap?
That's a tease. Take notes. Podcast starts right now. We are in NBC Studios in Stamford, Connecticut for a Sunday night. We all know what we're talking about tonight. It's the NBA Finals Game 2 coming up a little later. We'll walk you right through it if you're in your car and can't listen to it, or get you set up for the game. But most importantly, we must have had some breaking news story in the studio, Andrew, or did Dr. J just walk in? Because look, 45 seconds ago, you jumped and go, look, Paul, look. What just happened? I looked at the TV.
So you had your headphones on and couldn't hear me, and this was unacceptable. LeBron James has made his entrance into the arena, and he's wearing a short suit again.
A suit where the suit pants look like they're cut off into shorts.
Yes. They don't just look like it. They are cut off into shorts. But he added a twist this time. Last time he went sort of a formal top and a button-down shirt and a tie. This time he went sweatshirt under the jacket.
Almost like a hoodie, maybe.
Yeah, like a hoodie, which is a very cool look.
Right.
And then he was wearing, I think, white socks with like a red trim, like kind of like 70s, like white shadow kind of socks.
Yeah, he looked like he was ready to play from the ankle down, like he had his game shoes on, it appeared.
Yeah, it's a very interesting. So apparently a lot of people in the media criticizing his short suit after game one had no impact on LeBron.
Right. Now I'm already going to jump three steps ahead because I'm the biggest cynic in the room. You're probably a bigger cynic than I am. Any chance LeBron has some type of fashion business on the side, which I'm sure he does, where this suit got a lot of coverage in a bag? Someone said his whole outfit was like $49,000.
Yeah, I saw the price of a car, exactly.
Yeah, and he got a lot of publicity for all those things. He has to have a deal, some type of suit bag deal going on. He's not just doing this to look cool.
Yeah, so his suits, I believe, are Tom Brown, and I know that because I was shopping on their website.
Is it Tom Brown OM or like Thom Brown?
It's Thom Brown. It's very much Thom Brown, and I think it's Brown with an E, too. I have to double check that. Yes.
Side note, which bothers you more when someone named Todd spells Todd with one D?
That's unacceptable.
Or how about this? Hold on. Or when someone named Greg spells Greg with two G's at the end, which bothers you more? It could be a tie.
Ooh, like Greg Popovich, I believe.
But I like Greg Popovich as a person. But
yes.
Why would you add the extra G? It seems like a lifetime of double G writing.
Yeah, there's a Todd in the NFL, an interior lineman with one D. Todd with one D is basically, that's not even an English-speaking name.
But
I don't get that. I'm okay, I guess, with Greg.
I'm big on time-saving. You think Todd with one D would be something I would like, but I have trouble even looking at it.
No, it's not good. How about the old Geoff?
G-E-O-F-F.
That's just weird, right? Jeff Martin. I went to high school with a kid. It was just weird.
Geoff?
Yeah, his name was spelled Geoff, not Jeff.
We're going to talk about basketball in a bit, but this is the stuff that really bothers us.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's name is Thomas. If he tried to spell his name T-H-O-M, I probably would have disowned my family.
Yeah, you
would. But luckily, it went T-O-M.
Lucky for all of us. Now, it'd be like if I was Paul with two L's on the end. I mean, we have never met. We've never hung out.
Well, your name, Paul Papps, there's very little variation. You can't do a ton with it. Like, Andrew, I can go Drew. I can go AJ.
Yeah.
My middle name is James. You can't really do much with Paul Papps, can
no.
you?
No. Well, a lot of people go, look, as a kid, Papps Blue Ribbon, PBR. Yeah. People do that, which doesn't bother me at all. It's kind of a fun last name. But when I go places, wherever it is, let's say last night I went out to dinner, and they go, can we have a name for the reservation? I say, it's under Papps, like the beer. And I say, like the beer, every time, because it saves me having to spell it. And it seems to work most of the places.
That's good, yeah. Perloff, P-E-R-L-O-F-F, forget it.
It's just like it sounds, but it's a unique name.
Yeah, nobody gets the F's right. They're like, Mr. Perloff, come around.
All right,
it's tough.
For those of you listening who haven't turned the radio off yet because we're not talking sports yet, let's get right to it. Game 2 of the NBA Finals tonight. I think it's interesting that 5 days ago, the NBA Finals was supposed to be a cakewalk on shows like the Dan Patrick Show and other shows that we work on. We were discussing, is this going to be a rout? Is this going to be a blowout? Game 1, the line was minus 13 or minus 13 and a half when the game started. Game 1 couldn't have gone better for this NBA Finals. Hot take at all? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean.
It had everything.
Ironically, by the way, the Warriors came this close to covering in overtime.
Yes. But go back to, you know, we expected it to be a pretty easy game for the Warriors. You and I actually did not. We both said,
yeah.
And I think a lot of people in the media said, the Cavs are going to treat this like game seven because
yes.
if they get this, it's a series. If they don't get this, it's almost impossible to make it a series, which we all say. But it had a little bit of a fight at the end. It had some weird calls. The J.R. Smith play we'll get into, but it had that play will be around forever in NBA history.
Yeah.
It had everything.
It had Steph Curry hitting that three at the end of the half and then doing 3-2-1 with his fingers. You
yes.
know, it was a great meme. It totally was a perfect game.
It's one of those nights watching sports. If you watch the game head to toe, and I'll be quite honest, most NBA games I don't, and it's tough.
Yeah, of course.
Because usually you can miss the first quarter and things will flow back to the losing team or winning team. That game had everything, and it's the kind of game you'll remember no matter how the series plays out. If you remember, I think it was the 88 World Series where Kirk Gibson hit the home run at Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable play, unbelievable game. That was a game one.
Yeah, sure.
It feels like a game seven, but it was a game one.
Well, to me, this is Nick Anderson and the Magic Rockets all over again. When back in the 90s, Orlando Magic shooting forward, Nick Anderson missed 4 3 throws in a row at the
yes.
end of the game. And this is a game that Shaq and Magic had in hand. They lost. The Rockets ended up sweeping them, which would have been a much closer series, which makes me afraid that's the direction this could go.
Yeah, it really can. And the other thing about LeBron James is, you know, if they win that game, find a way to win, we'll go over the nuances of the game. That goes down as, people may say, the greatest game of his career. You may put that badge on it because if you look at his mileage, his age, the supporting cast, what they're up against, this may be, that could have been, and still could be, declared the greatest game of LeBron's career. Is that fair to say?
Oh, totally. I mean, there are, I actually heard somebody talk on the radio. There were some games where he went like 45, 15, and 10 mm-hmm. with the Heat and brought them back in the finals.
And they were probably favorite in those games, or at least close to favorite in those
games. Yeah, remember, the Heat had some battles in the finals, so he's had other remarkable games.
Right.
But I would at least give a little bit of that credit to the Warriors, just horrifically bad defense. The Warriors are so let's take one thing off the table here. The Warriors are half asleep. They are not motivated until they get down in any game of basically since they started playing the Rockets. It's not like a team. It's not the same Warriors that we've known before.
But don't you think it's impossible psychologically
yeah.
or whatever to motivate yourself when you have ultimate confidence in the end result?
Yes,
because it's like I don't know what it would be. It'd be like running against your kids. And you're running and you're letting them win for a little bit. And you know that all you got to do is flip the switch and it's over. You don't get nervous at the 30-meter part. But then let's say you're racing your kids and you want to beat them just to have fun with them and just to play with them.
Yeah.
The last 10 yards, you know you could do it. That's what it feels like, or at least maybe in their heads.
Yeah, but they basically blew game one with that attitude.
But except for the result.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have won.
They
LeBron's going right on them every time and there's no one at the rim. Why Steve Kerr is not playing a big man is the mystery of the entire postseason to me. I mean, LeBron, how many layups did he hit? It was like a pregame layup drill against the Warriors.
You know, I thought the Warriors could use a guy like JaVale McGee
yeah.
down low, or even David West, who's a banger down low, and just leave him down there on defense to hammer LeBron if he comes down the lane.
Yeah, right now LeBron is just traipsing through there. No problem at all.
I was watching the starters on NBA TV, good show, and those guys, they were talking about game one defensive strategy of the Warriors, and they said they believed the Warriors' strategy was, we're going to make the other guys work for it. LeBron can go ahead and get his 40, but if the other guys get 35 and yeah. LeBron has 40, we're going to win. And it generally worked because LeBron didn't have a ton of help.
I mean, well,
that was their
– yeah.
They're saying that's what they wanted to happen based on LeBron being single covered the entire first
Well,
half.
You know, Dwayne Casey did that with the Raptors. It cost him his job because the Cavs blew them out.
Right.
Because they were – but you notice when the game got tight, they started double-teaming LeBron. And
yes.
overtime, they double-teamed him. So what is Steve Kerr doing? I've noticed – I think Steve Kerr – is having something going on. He seems not totally motivated to get the right rotations. Nobody's saying anything to Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is, have you seen any of the ISO ball numbers on Durant?
Right.
He's basically ISO'd more in this postseason than he did the entire all of last season.
And that's the opposite of what that team is
yeah,
about.
Yeah, they've gotten out of Warriors ball. It's mainly Durant is slowing down the offense, and defensively, nobody is playing.
It is weird with the Warriors. All of a sudden, after not playing for a week and a half, JaVale McGee just shows up in the game
yeah.
and plays. I think he had 6 points in the first 90 seconds.
Yeah, why don't like wide-open dunks? Why do they not have that guy in there? I know he made a couple of mistakes, too.
Right.
But you need some kind of inside presence. LeBron had 51 points, and you were trying to stop him. You know, Curry, obviously. What do you think of Curry defensively? Seem to go after him a lot.
I want to go back to LeBron James. You're right. He only attempted 7 3-pointers, which sounds like a lot. That's not a lot for a 50-point game.
Why would he? He had a wide-open lane to the – all he did is go – he goes right every time, and there's just nobody. Kevon Looney is a nice defensive player one-on-one, but he's not a help defender.
No, he's not a big guy.
And Draymond is not really engaged like he usually is either. I know I've been critical of Draymond recently.
Draymond, who had 13 points, 9 assists, 11 rebounds, 5 steals, and 2 blocks the other night in 47 minutes.
But you got to – okay, there's nobody else to rebound on the floor. The Cavs missed about 200 shots. You know, the Cavs destroyed the Warriors on the boards. I mean, absolutely mauled them. Draymond did not play well, and then they left him open. Eventually, he started hitting threes. Draymond's gotten to the point where you don't even put a guy on him. There's something totally wrong with him this
year. Well, he shoots so – his shooting attempts per game compared to 2 years ago is down almost like 40%. And so it's like – He's not used to shooting anymore. He's like fourth on the depth chart at best at the shooting guard, but at the shooting position.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like he lost. You know, he was only shooting 11% from three in the entire Western Conference Finals. The Rockets, I think he's lost a little bit of confidence and got it back at the end of the game. So hopefully he'll play better for the Warriors.
What's the play? We're going to talk about J.R. Smith and mess ups in sports and mind melts, whatever you want to say, after the break. But what's the play or series of plays in game one that you said that's why they lost, that's why they won? I'll start with there was a play where Kevin Durant took the ball to the hole and LeBron stripped him. They called a foul. Clean strip. Really nice steal.
Yeah, I heard you call that a clean strip.
I have no favoritism for LeBron.
I don't know if you're saying you would bet a week's pay that there was no hand touched at all.
By LeBron? No. There was someone else riding Durant's back, but I don't think they called it.
You're saying LeBron, and by the way, you're saying LeBron got all ball, no hand whatsoever.
Yes. I really believe so. I'd like to watch it again. We can watch it.
There's no clean strips in the NBA, Paul. They hit him in the hand every time. It's never happened in
never.
The 75-year history of the NBA. There's no way that was perfectly clean. Those guys are so strong that they're hitting each other left and right. It's just a matter of how much you call.
It's the first clean strip in NBA history. Then you go back the other way. LeBron takes to the hole, gets hit pretty cleanly on the wrist, and didn't get the call. LeBron should be getting calls when there's no contact, but his physicality, he has to take a harder hit than the other guys.
What about his off arm? What if you start calling that, like, by according to the rule book? He just goes in there. He's like elbowing. He hits his defensive guy every single play.
Right. So you can't, because he does it every single play, you can't call it.
Well, the same thing on LeBron. He's too big. You can't even tell what's a foul. It's like Cam Newton. It's like Cam Newton in the pocket.
Oh, quick freeze frame on NBA TV. Good job by them. They're showing LeBron's outfit.
Oh, there's Draymond with a suit.
Draymond
with
Green is answering with a nice nautical blue sport coat, shorts, sneaker look, no socks, if I stand corrected, and the baby in arm, which really stokes up a little bit.
Oh, by the way, I know we have to break. Kevin Love's playing. I think we both saw that coming.
Yeah. I mean, he had 21 and 13.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't disqualified by the NBA. They said that he had walked onto the court before to argue the previous play.
Here's why I think Kevin Love did not get thrown out. The rule is when there's an altercation on the floor, if you leave the vicinity of the bench, you don't even have to, like, engage the play. You just have to start engaging the play, leaving the bench. Love, Hardy, was walking on the court and just hanging out as the play was going on. And he was, like, kind of meandering towards the locker room real slowly, and he's watching what's going on. And then he turned towards the action, but he never went out and engaged the action.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, they couldn't call him for it because he was already doing it before the fight started.
Yeah, and actually the NBA said that when he saw the fight, he retreated. He was arguing, I guess he was arguing the call before with the officials, so that's why he was out there. I don't know why he was arguing the call before, why that's cool. But
by the way, good job by Adam Silver not disqualifying him. He wants all stars on deck.
Oh, man, especially, you know, the Cavs. Maybe take a Warriors player out. Now, Paul, there's one thing that's missing tonight. It's Sunday night. A lot of sports going on, but there's no buffet in the building because it happens to be an off night in the Stanley Cup Final. How depressed are you about that?
Yeah, we're at NBCSN, the home of hockey in America, and if you're here and there's hockey, there's tons of food.
Oh, it's a smorgasbord.
There's different nationalities involved. Yeah. It's just fantastic.
Like Norwegian food, Swedish food, whatever the guys are, Canadian food, it's great.
Nobody ever says, hey, let's go out for some good Canadian food. Like, you rarely hear that when you and your friends get together.
What is Canadian food?
Poutine? That's the only
answer
I have.
But that's French Canadian.
French-Canadian food.
I think that's a French food, actually.
If you know anything about Canadian cuisine, please call in 855-323-4622.
A lot of gravy on fries.
That's poutine, right?
Yeah, you get it at McDonald's there, too. But, you know, the thing they have is Molson Brodeurs. Have you ever had that?
No.
So Molson's have, like, twice the amount of alcohol. At least it used
Molson
to be
Molson beer in Canada.
It's called a Brodeur. It's basically their basic beer, but double the alcohol. And it's sort of like their Budweiser.
And it tastes like former great goaltender Martin Brodeur?
It really does. It really does.
That's
so
fantastic.
The Stanley Cup Final 2-1. Capitals won last night to take the lead, which is raising a question for me. What happens to this Vegas Golden Knights hype if they don't win the series? Is it still a big deal, or do we sort of forget about it?
Well, this may not be a popular take, but I'm not rooting for the Golden Knights to win. Because it's too easy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not because I'm a long-suffering Cubs fan and all that kind of BS. I'm talking about teams in their first year of existence shouldn't win anything. Getting to this is great. You had a great year. This is great for all sports that are considering Vegas. They showed that they could take over sports and fan bases and entertainment and the look of it. But the Washington Capitals fans have really suffered. You know, like, how long have you suffered as a Golden Knights fan? Like, the first 3 weeks of the season when you were 500? That was a real tough stretch.
So this is the Cubs fan in you speaking.
I think
you guys, so you want to reward long-suffering fans.
I'm also doing the Golden Knights fans a favor, because every day after this will be a bummer. It can never get better than this. If the Golden Knights somehow come back and win this, their franchise has peaked in the first 9 months of existence. It can't get better.
Let me play a counter-argument here. Is Vegas fans have been waiting for decades to have a pro team. You know, this is a huge deal. They were sort of left out of the party for so long. It wasn't their fault.
But this is the deal when you get a new franchise. You accept mediocrity or less than mediocrity for the first 3 years. It's assumed. You don't make the playoffs the first 3 years. You don't go far. The Jacksonville Jaguars?
Made the AFC title game pretty quickly.
Year three, maybe?
Tom Coughlin.
And even if you look at the Carolina Panthers with the NFL, they started in the 90s. I think they were 7-9 their first year, which 7-9 for an expansion team is like 15-1.
I think expansion teams are better. When we were kids, they were like 0-14, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes.
Now I think expansion teams can turn things around quickly because of free agency and whatnot.
I also think leagues set up these drafts where they can get players from other teams. And the NHL set it up where a lot of financially expendable players got put on the board
right.
That the Las Vegas Golden Knights could grab. James Neal, Fleury. What's the expansion team, any sport where you're like, oh, I got to go get that hat. I got to go get that jersey.
Well, generally, you know, there was an expansion period where everybody went really ugly colors.
Yes.
Teal. The Charlotte
Alexander
Hornets.
Alexander Julien was the designer.
Oh, that stuff was all terrible. I didn't want
a lot of people
any
bought
of that
it.
Gear. Yeah, but that was really marketed to young kids who have – mostly colorblind young kids. I'm trying to think of...
That's not a fact, is it?
So if you listen to Dan Patrick's show, I was openly begging the Las Vegas Golden Knights to send us stuff. I believe you were, too. You were more subtle about it. That is a great... It looks like the Army cadet, obviously. But that's a great logo. Nothing else. You got one that jumps out to you recently?
I remember when the Colorado Rockies baseball team started, and they were purple and black. And I'm not standing by that, but a bunch of my friends go, let's go to the mall and get a Colorado Rockies hat. I didn't buy one.
What? Purple and black? That's like almost teal.
The black saves it from being soft.
Black is cool. And maybe they were big Dante Bichette fans.
Oh, who wasn't? All right, what are we talking about next? Talking to your boy.
Oh, little Brian Colangelo. Talk next with Joe Giglio from Philadelphia Sports Radio. It's going to be great. Tune in. Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio.
All right, one of the weirder stories in the year in sports. This is easily top four weirdest stories out of nowhere. If you don't know Brian Colangelo, the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers, you're not alone. Most sports fans don't. You have to be a pretty serious NBA fan to know who he is. Perloff, take it from there.
Okay, so it's been a wild week. I'm sure you've heard about Brian Colangelo's tweets at this point, but we're going to bring in Joe Giglio from WIP Sports Radio in Philadelphia and has a new podcast, Me and Giglio Down by the Schoolyard, that I was on this week. I know, awesome.
That's a great name.
Joe, for somebody who's been out of town for a month, can you summarize what is happening with Brian Colangelo and the Philadelphia 76ers?
Well, a lot. Here's how I'll try to summarize it for you guys. At some point early last week, Tuesday, I guess it was, The Ringer published a story about Brian Colangelo and the mystery Twitter account. And what was uncovered, and we're not sure by who, but someone tipped The Ringer to kind of look into the story. There were five Twitter accounts. They were all linked whether by who they were following or kind of just there were similarities in the language that these Twitter accounts were using, all using weird and strange names. And all of them, or at least four out of the five that were active, one was just kind of retweet, but four of the five that were active were ardently defending Brian Colangelo, bashing up Sixers players under Colangelo's watch, and taking exception when anyone liked Sam Hinkie, the ex-Sixers GM, more than Brian Colangelo. It was going on for years, and at the end of the Ringer investigation, there was pretty decent reason to believe that Brian Colangelo himself was behind or at least connected with these Twitter accounts, because a lot of them were following people from his past, ex-agents, his son's basketball team, and live tweeting games from the University of Chicago. So a little Twitter investigation quickly determined that this was either Brian Colangelo or someone very, very close to him.
All right, so this story blew up the other day. We on the Dan Patrick Show did most of the show on it, as is most shows. I mean, to the point where Mike Florio was having a draft with Chris Sims, who's the most likely person in the NFL to have a burner account. Where are we now? Because the Sixers had an investigation, and this story was big, but there haven't been a lot of details since the day of this and what you gave us. Do we know any more about, is Colangelo directly involved? Was he set up in any way? Or were family members involved? What do we know about those three options?
Well, the one thing that I think was ruled out pretty quickly, even though it was the first excuse given by Brian Colangelo, was him being set up, that this had nothing to do with him at all. I mean, the language of the tweet, it gave off the feeling that it was someone inside the building. If it wasn't Colangelo, it was a coworker, but really it felt like Colangelo's thoughts that were being put out there. Now, the most common theory, and it's the one I believe to some capacity, is that his wife was either directly responsible or was in conjunction with him tweeting from these accounts. He's already admitted this. Adrian Wojnarowski went on SportsCenter on Friday and basically said that Colangelo's telling the team it was his wife and he's trying to save his job. Here's the amazing part is here, guys. This was Tuesday the story came out. The Sixers on Wednesday said we're going to have an investigation. Everyone in Philadelphia assumed he was getting canned Friday, the old summer, late afternoon Friday news dump. It's Sunday evening, and game two of the finals in a couple of hours, and Brian Colangelo is still employed as we have this conversation. I don't know where this is going, but I just can't believe it isn't resolved yet.
Joe, I heard one report that Brian's dad, Jerry Colangelo, a longtime NBA executive, who is many consider sort of the genius behind Brian, told the 76ers, listen, you owe me from coming in after Sam Hinkie, the former GM, and the process, and the 76ers were a bit of a laughingstock within the league. I came in and turned this franchise around, eventually hired my son, Brian, and he has been using his weight, which is hefty in the NBA, to keep Brian in place. Sound plausible to you at all?
It sounds plausible that the Colangelos would think this is going to work, and who knows? Maybe they will with the Sixers. I would just be embarrassed to even try to do this if I was Brian Colangelo or Jerry, who really didn't do anything. But he came in, he traded a pair of second-round picks for Ish Smith, and the team went from 130 to actually winning 10 games that season. It wasn't like, you know, they became a title contender under Jerry Colangelo. And my take on it is they already gave him what they owed him. They hired his son to be the GM after, you know, a couple months' search. So if I'm Jerry, I'm like, all right, if I already got my son hired, what am I going to do here? Well, I guess he's trying to save his job. It's a mess. The Sixers are a laughingstock, guys. And the only thing I can tell you, the only guess I have, is that they're trying to vet through every tweet to find cause and to find reason to fire him so they don't have to pay him so they have a real reason to do it. But if that's not it, I'm just baffled.
Well, this is a weird story, and I guess you know, what you put a bow on it with there is that they want to have all their ducks in a row before they let him go. Maybe they like him personally. I know Brian. I met Brian Colangelo back in the day when Phoenix, very likable, personable person in the community. I want to move on to one more topic before we let you go. Andrew and I have been debating this all year, basically, about Ben Simmons and his lack of a jump shot, no three-pointers hit this year. Have you heard any rumblings about off-season plans for him to work with a shooting coach, do anything different than normal off-season plans to get him an NBA-ready jump shot?
So when the season ended, the Sixers had their exit interviews. I guess it was the day after, a couple days after. And they, you know, they talked about different things and where they're going. And obviously the front office was focused on big-picture stuff. And now who knows if Colangelo will be there for it. But then they had Ben talk and Joel Embiid talk. And when Ben Simmons, you know, came up to talk, the question centered around exactly what you're saying. Is there going to be big picture changes to your jump shot, revamp it? And he gave off the vibe he just wanted to tweak things. from what I know from the beat writers that are there every day, he does shoot jumpers in practice. Now, I'm not saying he hits all of them, but he's more willing to do it when no one is watching or it's not a game situation. So maybe that is the big difference. Maybe it's not tweaking the shot so much. It's actually using it. But the one thing I will say is, and this has been out there since I guess he was drafted, is there's a feeling here and a feeling among a lot of people around the NBA that he shoots with the wrong hand, that he's a right-handed person that happens to play basketball, mostly left-handed. I don't think he's going to revamp the shot that much and shoot with the other hand, but it's always in the back of my mind. And in fact, I think it was last week, he threw out the first pitch at a Philadelphia Phillies game, and he threw it out right-handed. Ben Simmons is right-handed, and if you watch him around the basket, he's always using his right hand. He steps out to shoot or a free throw, it's left-handed. It's very strange. It's kind of par for the course.
Oh, my God.
One quick follow-up. So who's the free agent that you put next to Ben Simmons? Doesn't he do the same thing that LeBron James does? I know, obviously, you don't say no to LeBron, but is there – what's the free agent? I saw Coach Brett Brown said we need to add a veteran free agent. Who's the guy that you put in that mix to sort of fix all their problems?
Yeah, and then he followed that up because he was asked a question, Andrew, about fit. And I think, you know, everyone was talking about LeBron without using his name because they couldn't. And Brett basically said, look, we'll make it work. And I think that's kind of the company line. If LeBron wants to come to Philadelphia, they're going to figure out and they're going to make it work. I think the more natural fit, just in terms of fit, not overall star player, is Paul George. I think he'd come in and he'd probably be the best scorer right away. And we get a ton of open shots from Ben Simmons. I also think a trade for Kawhi Leonard could make a lot of sense for the Sixers. If he's truly on the block, I think they'd be in the mix to make that kind of deal. But I think as everyone else is going to do, they're going to wait to see what LeBron says and then kind of pivot from there.
He's Joe Giglio. Follow him at Joe Giglio Sports and listen to the new podcast with yours truly, me and Giglio down by the schoolyard. Joe, thanks for your time. We'll talk soon, buddy.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
You know, moving off the Brian Colangelo thing to the fact that Ben Simmons may be a right-handed human being and not left-handed after all these years, this is interesting because my daughter Molly is right-handed. She's been right-handed, writing right-handed in school. I'm 90% sure she's a left-handed person. She does everything else as a left-hander. Even the way I was trying to teach her how to ride a bike this weekend, and she had it the other way, like the way she was on the side of the bike. I tried to teach her how to, when she like goes to catch something, when you throw something, her natural reaction is to put her left hand up in the air to catch it, not her right hand, which she writes with.
Do you remember when she learned to write, how it went down?
I don't know. I just, maybe in grade school, they put a pen in her right hand, and she imitated what she saw 90% of the other kids doing and putting in their right hand, but I'm pretty sure she's left-handed. So I asked her to try out a snowboard, and she went goofy foot. She went the other way, which is what left-handers do. Mm. And so I'm pretty sure. I don't know if this is how it worked with Ben Simmons, but look at Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson, they call him lefty. He's right-handed. He learned how to hit a golf ball left-handed by facing his dad. They went and faced each other so he could watch him. So the only thing in Phil Mickelson's life he does left-handed is golf.
Well, aren't there hundreds of baseball players who hit left-handed who are righties?
Yeah, but the weird thing is that Ben Simmons shoots mostly right-handed near the basket. That's a reaction. Like if he caught the ball, he said, get it up. He would put it up right-handed.
Yeah.
That means you're a right-handed person, doesn't it?
I guess so. By the way, Tim Tebow, I've always wondered about his hand. We'll get into that later. We're the Leisuremen here on NBC Sports Radio. I'm Andrew Perloff. He's Paul Papp. Today is a very special day. Not only is it the NBA Finals Game 2, it is McLovin's birthday. The real McLovin.
Oh, I thought you were going third person and nickname him.
No. So McLovin, not even the real McLovin's birthday. McLovin, the character from the great Judd Apatow movie Superbad, his fake ID's birthday was 6/03/1981, which makes him, his fake ID, 37 years old. Gosh, feels like that was yesterday. Now, if you remember, it was a high school student needed a fake ID, and he put McLovin, one name on his fake ID.
One name.
On purpose.
What do you seal? One name.
Oh, man. So, and I'm called McLovin on the Dan Patrick Show for reasons that still to this day elude me. So I got about 200 tweets saying, happy birthday, McLovin. And I'm looking at the picture of this big, 16-year-old Christopher Mintz Plotz, who plays McLovin, looks nothing like me. But whatever, I'm stuck with it. So happy birthday, McLovin. Great character.
I find it fascinating with great comedies. Like, as they come up with the bit where Christopher Mintz Plotz's character, what's his real name in the movie? His name's like Fogel?
Yeah, Fogel.
Fogel. And they're like, all right, he's going to get a fake ID, and it's going to have one name. And they're all probably in a room going, all right, what's the name going to be? And someone just yells out, how about McLovin? And which isn't, it's nothing. It's not, it's not even a word.
Well, isn't there a, there's a song by Bootsy Collins called McLovin. So there was some cultural pre-existing McLovin.
Oh, that's big.
I think that's where he got it from, but I'm not sure. By the way, interesting tidbit. Do you know that him and the Michael Cera character went to Dartmouth the following year?
In the movie.
They said they were going to room together at Dartmouth, which is my alma mater, which brings it back to McLovin. But you're right. So you think, by the way, would the movie have been the same if it had not been McLovin? You know, that was such a huge part of that movie.
It was like perfect. It hits. It's a thing you use years and years later. There's little scenes in movies that I think are so throwaway but are iconic. If you go back to Animal House, when John Belushi is walking down the stairs and the guy's, I gave my love a chicken, and he's playing the guitar, and he's a very, you know, like, serious guy who's got girls watching him. By the way, one of the women sitting there watching the guy in the toga party scene with Belushi is Belushi's wife.
Oh, wow.
Judy Belushi. And so Belushi takes the guitar and smashes it and hands it back to him. He goes, sorry. But he says it so softly and calmly. And I wonder if that was that scene put in Animal House to fill time? Like, they're like, you know, this movie's only like 72 minutes. We need 28 more minutes or whatever it is.
But actually, wasn't 3/4 of the movie basically filling time when you think about it?
Yes.
The plot was a little thin. Dean Wormer dropped the big one.
Yeah.
All right. We could get lost in Animal House for hours. Before we do that, Paul, how was your weekend?
Good weekend up in Rhode Island. Went to a beach, and there's a lot of rules on this beach. Mm-hmm. And I read over the list of rules as you walked in. It's a typical thing. No glass containers. No fires at the beach without permission. You know, you got to, if you want to have a bonfire at the beach, you have to get permission. Okay. No dogs. Okay. I understand no dogs because you don't want other little kids getting, but it's a public beach, a big public beach.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
That's pretty common.
No ball throwing.
No,
you can't throw a football around with the bros or your kid.
That's like 80% of what you do at a beach, to throw a football or impress the ladies.
No, there's no alcohol. Okay, fine. But no ball throwing at a beach. That seems a little strong, because what are you supposed to do?
What about a frisbee? Is that?
No frisbees.
Wow.
I mean, you bring a frisbee to the beach, people get hit.
How about a paddle ball?
Nothing. No ball games. Nothing can be thrown between two people.
No projectiles.
Is this the part of the culture where we can't bother other people anymore? And we're so... You know, probably some kid got hit with a football. The mom complains, the dad complains, and now they said no ball throwing at the beach anymore. And thousands of people go to this beach, whatever beach it is. I'm sure lots of beaches have no ball throwing rules. I think this is a symptom of the culture we're in.
What would happen if you threw a ball? Were there guards?
The lifeguard would walk up to you and say this. I actually was at the beach, and there was the waves were coming in. They're real little waves, but our kids were having fun in them. There was a rock like dug into the sand. This rock was probably about a yard and a half wide, like a baby boulder. And it's only about 10 inches high, just sticking out of the sand. My kids and I tried to balance on this rock, and we're basically, the water's just barely coming up to this rock and splashing us. And we're seeing if we could balance on it as the water hit us. Harmless fun. My kids are 9 and 6. The lifeguard goes, and whistles, and he goes, yeah. And he points at me. I'm like, me? He goes, yeah. And he waves me over, and he goes, yeah, no standing on the rock. I go, why?
And standing on the rock, that signs at every beach, too. You're not allowed to stand on rocks.
The rock is there in the middle of the sand. It's not like a platform of death.
Oh, wait, it's not in the water? It's on the sand?
It's buried in the sand, a rock.
Right.
It's just, jutting.
You're not in the ocean. This is on the sand part.
This is on the very, right before you enter the water. The water is just barely coming up to where this rock is.
Yeah, I'm down with the lifeguard, Paul. You can't do shenanigans up on this
shenanigans.
Rock.
We're standing. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, you could fall and one of the kids could hit their head. I'm like, well, isn't that on me?
I guess not. This is a strict beach. I don't want to visit anymore.
The name of it is Strict Beach, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
It's a very niche beach.
Yeah.
What else you got going on?
So I started the summer basketball league this weekend.
Really? I heard you had a good debut.
Yes, so they have a rule, up to 15 ones and twos. Now, Paul, since I did very well in my math SAT, I know that your percentages, if you're shooting ones and twos, you got to jack up the threes, because that's even more value than you get in the NBA.
It's twice as much.
It's like a four-pointer.
Right.
So me and my friends, we just started jacking up threes, and we dominated everybody because of the, we basically used Daryl Morey principles to win and pick up basketball, the GM of the Rockets.
So you used math and your athletic ability in that order?
Well, math and very little athletic ability. We are nearing game time at Oracle Arena. We got guys coming in the into the arena. LeBron James had shorts and a suit on again.
Again.
He had a mix. He had these red socks. I mean, I think we could spend the rest of the time here on that. We're seeing other guys walk in, including Klay Thompson. And for an update on how everyone's doing, we're going to talk to Kurt Heelan with At Basketball Talk on Twitter from NBCSports.com, lead NBA writer. Kurt is at Oracle Arena. Kurt, let me start with that. Have you seen Klay Thompson today? How is he looking, and should we expect him to play?
I would expect him to play. He did walk in without a limp. Steve Kerr said that he, you know, officially it's the he's going to go through warm-ups and then decide thing, but that's it was pretty much code for he's going to play. Said he was doing a lot better. When he walked in, he didn't have any kind of limp, noticeable limp, so that's actually a slight change from yesterday when he kind of hobbled out to the podium. So he seems to be doing better. They're going to give it a go. I think what's going to be interesting, guys, I mean, if you're Cleveland, aren't you going to switch him onto LeBron on like the first two possessions and just go at him and see how he moves?
Absolutely. That's a good point. I wonder if they make that kind of adjustment. I want to go back to game one. You've been covering this sport for a long time. Sometimes in sports, there's games that just stay with you for days where the game feels like a marathon, like an experience. Game one felt to me like a memorable, classic sporting event, but it was a game one. Isn't that kind of an anomaly?
A little bit. I mean, usually the game ones are, you know, to use LeBron's terms, it's a feeling out game, right? It's a kind of the first round of a heavyweight fight where they're kind of sizing each other up as much as anything else. This one, I think part of it was, honestly, because we're in year four of this, the bad blood's there. Everybody knows what everybody's going to do already. There's not a lot of secrets here. They changed the date on the game plan from last year and remove all the Kyrie sections and just hand it back out, you know. So I think but it did. That was a huge game. It was emotional and intense. And I'm curious how well the Cavs bounced back from that kind of loss.
Now, J.R. Smith of the Cavs says that he can handle that kind of thing. It's like it was him and not another player when he sort of tried to run out the clock in a tie game. Kurt, do you expect a hangover from Game 1 for the Cavs, or do you think they're inspired by what happened in Game 1?
By the way, I think that's the million-dollar question for how both for tonight and like how long this series actually goes. Because that usually you would say that was your chance to steal one on the road, right? That was it. There was your chance. There was your opportunity, and you missed it. Now, logic would dictate, and usually in these situations, the Warriors, you know, the home team, the Warriors would just come back with the crushing blowout. But I don't know. I think the Cavs found some things that work. Plus, they've got that LeBron guy. He's pretty good. And they may be able to. They can. I think if they can hang in this series, even if they lose tonight, but it's another close game, we'll have a series on their hand because they'll go home and they'll get more out of their role players, and Rodney Hood may even touch the floor.
Kurt, going back to game one, when J.R. Smith rebounds that ball and starts dribbling out, I had a reaction, so did Andrew Perloff here, my co-host, where as he's dribbling out away, the tone of how he's dribbling out felt like a guy running away from the defense, trying to get fouled, and that's what he was actually trying to do. And I almost bought it for a second. I was like, oh, are they up one? And it was just a flashing moment. But did you find that, like, where the tone of the play, no one was chasing him down, was like, hey, are they, just for a flash, we're like, oh, are the Cavs up one?
Yeah, I don't know that I had that reaction. I will say this, and you guys, you've covered sports for a while. You've been on press row. Press row for a sporting event, even a major sporting event like this, it's pretty staid, right? Everybody's kind of working their computer laptops up. They're tweeting.
Right.
Everybody's making some snarky comments, but there's rarely any kind of, like, loud noises or nobody's really yelling anything. There's certainly no cheering. I'll tell you what. When JaVale, like, rimmed that dunk and pretty much fell over, press row, like, people fell off their chairs. It was so funny. Then they get to that last play, and literally our whole row, and I've got like Kevin Pelton, the numbers guy from ESPN, who's just, you know, not this kind of guy. Every one of us stood up and like put our hands out. We looked like LeBron, like, what are you doing? I've never seen press row kind of react in that way where we're all like baffled by what was going on.
All right, Kurt, let's switch to the Warriors for a second. We're starting to see a lot of numbers come out about Kevin Durant and ISO ball, that he has, in this postseason, had 128 plays of ISO ball compared to 44 last year. Is this a matchup thing, or is there something going on with Durant?
I think it's been a matchup thing. I think Houston and Houston's really good defense. I mean, hopefully people didn't sleep on this Houston had a killer series, and they played really good defense against them. And traditionally, Kevin Durant isolation is the, well, we ran 17 seconds of offense, and it didn't work. Throw it to KD. He's kind of right. A bailout isolation option. There was a lot more of that, and then they forced them into the isolation more because of their switching. They just kind of like, oh, we've got this matchup, let's go at it. And it took them out of what they wanted to do. I think that that was part of it. Houston forced a lot of them, but they have fallen into that trap a little more this year. I kind of think it's back to the question we all have about the Warriors, which is just how focused are they night to night? Because if they're not focused and they're not kind of dialing in their offense, then they do lean on Durant more. Well, I would say to find the mismatch. He's a walking mismatch. It doesn't really matter who's on him. But, you know, they lean on that more when they're not kind of dialed in with their motion offense.
I think a lot of NBA reporters, guys who cover the league like you, kind of have a thought in their mind when they walk into the arena. Here's what I think's going to happen tonight. If I talk to you in 4 hours from now, well, how do you think tonight plays out? Not just who wins, but how do they win?
I think if you wanted me to make a guess, I think the Warriors crush them. I think this is one of those games where, I mean, it may not be till the second half. It may be one of those third quarter runs. But, you know, they made the third quarter run last game, and they got up by, I have to look at the numbers, but I want to say they got up by 10 or 11 at one point. And then the Warriors fought it back down to 6 at the half, and they obviously, you know, or at the end of the third, and they got Cavs were back in it, and they didn't get swept up in the run, as tends to happen. The tidal wave didn't kind of wash them away. I got a feeling tonight's the opposite. If you made me guess, tonight's the night where that 11-point run becomes 25 points at some point, you know, and we'll see. I think that's why I said I think we're going to learn a lot about where the Cavs are tonight from how they respond. But this is the kind of game where I think the Warriors come in a little more dialed in.
You can follow him at Basketball Talk. He's Kurt Heelan. Kurt, thanks for the time. Enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah. By the way, if anybody's out there heard that and then wanted to go place a bet, I'm really bad at gambling. So just be warned on that stuff.
All right, thanks, Kurt. Enjoy the game. You know, it's weird because I think the same thing. If I was gambling, I would bet a good chunk of change on the Warriors. I think they're giving 11.5 tonight, and I think I would give the points to the Cavs. That said, you know, both of us in the first game, my big bet, you know, we don't talk betting too much on the show, but especially now, we might as well because it's coming. I thought the first half cover, the Cavaliers were getting 6 points in the first half. There's a niche bet in pro sports. It's called the first half line.
You love the first half line.
I think this is not the easiest because it's going to sound cocky, and if I was good at it, I wouldn't be sitting here. The first half line in sports, I think, is a lot easier to read than the full game line. So, for example, the Warriors were giving the Cavs 6 points in the first half. There was a point in the game where the Cavs were up 10, 11, 12 points with maybe 4 minutes to go. I was like, that first half line is so safe. The Cavs are going to cover that 6 points. And then Curry starts going off. They go on like an 11-1 run. I'm like, oh, no. There's like about 90 seconds left, and I think the game was a one-point game. I could see the Warriors going on another 8-0 run and just blowing that away.
It was tied at half, I think, now that you mentioned it. It was real close. It's funny. Then I mentioned earlier that in overtime, I think the Warriors went up by 11.
Right.
Then J.R. Smith hit a three-pointer to make it 8. Then they hit 2 free throws. But if J.R. Smith, who had just made the boneheaded play of the century, hadn't hit that three-pointer, it could have been – and some people got the game at 12.5.
Right,
too.
Early in the week.
Yeah, so it could have easily been that. So I'm staying away, although I agree with you, it feels like the Warriors are going to jump out early.
My favorite bet in all of sports is the first half college football cover for the underdog. Like when I see Navy playing Ohio State – And almost it's always like Navy 10, Ohio State 10 at half. And I was like, look at the Naval Academy staying right with Ohio State, and the game finishes 24-10 or 31-10.
So why don't you throw some money on it next year?
I don't know. I may change. You know, we should maybe do something different with the Leisurman and openly bet on the show and talk about it. But I always thought that you shouldn't do it, or you should be forthcoming with
what?
The listener.
What? Are you kidding me?
Well, I think you should be – if you're betting on sports and you're a media person, I think you should tell.
Why?
Because then you're rooting. You're not covering the game objectively.
Oh my gosh. It's 2018. Is anyone doing anything objectively?
Well, I think that's always the goal. And if you are watching a sporting event, or I guess you could talk about it without still be objective.
Yeah, but if you're playing fantasy football, which a lot of people do, you're not being objective.
That's one of the reasons I don't play fantasy.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. But I haven't even actually considered that. The funny thing, though, about that first half line, you know, Paulie, like, I'm sure over time, it becomes 50-50. They,
oh, yes.
There's just very few.
I'm just touting real, my wins.
Yeah, there's very few real advantages like that in Vegas. So I'll bet you they get it close to 50%, which is the funny thing about Vegas.
All right, coming up next, it's the return of the Leisureman Couch. It's where you send in your life issues, your life questions, your life dilemmas. Go to @TheLeisureman on Twitter. Send them in now. The best ones make the air. Leisureman, NBC Sports Radio. Paul Pabst, Andrew Perloff.
It's amazing how quickly the World Cup is coming upon us. I was telling my wife about it today, actually. I'm like, the World Cup's almost here. She's like, really? She was shocked.
There's zero buzz in America because USA is not in it. And now, that doesn't mean the World Cup's still not big here, but it's more big with people who are rooting for other countries, England and France and Egypt and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm getting more bummed. I actually, when the U.S. didn't make it the first time, you know, when it happened, I was definitely like a little bit bummed, but now it's really hitting me. I'm like, oh, man, because I had so much fun last time.
It was a lot of fun. We'll talk a lot of soccer in about 10 minutes with Grant Wall of Sports Illustrated. All right, one of the things we like to do on the Leisureman is give you life advice. We have no training, right, Andrew?
None whatsoever.
We have not certified. We have no board certifications.
Very little expertise.
I was a C student. I went to college for a long time. I still got C's, but I was there for a long time. You went to Dartmouth. That's, you know, if someone from Dartmouth gives you advice, that's probably pretty good.
I wouldn't go that far.
All right, I got a couple questions. We'll take your calls as well, 855-323-4622. First question comes from Nate Miller on Twitter. Big wedding coming up, his wedding. I'm already paying for food and drinks. This young man, Nate Miller, is paying for his own wedding. Do we have to give out wedding favors too? I asked him, I go, does this mean for your groomsmen? He goes, yes, for the groomsmen or also wedding favors for all the guests. Now, you got married, I got married. Yeah. You always get your groomsmen a gift. Your boys, you get them something.
Right.
Now, we'll start there. What did you get your groomsmen for the groomsmen gift?
These customized cufflinks.
Right, which...
Which
nice.
Is, by the way, a go-to. A lot of people do cufflinks.
Okay. But it went over fine, right?
Oh, it was great.
Didn't take too much effort on your part. It's a nice...
Cost me a little bit of money. You want to spend something respectable.
Okay, here's what I did, and you may make fun of this one. I got my groomsmen each a personalized Louisville Slugger with their name on it. The actual bat from Louisville Slugger really wasn't that much money. But the problem was, and I give them each their bats, and they're like, oh, this is pretty cool. I don't think most people have a Louisville Slugger, even a
yeah,
grown man.
Yeah, that sounds very cool.
My buddy Phil, who can, you know what, on anything, he can put down anything. He goes, and he has a cigarette in his mouth. He goes, how the hell am I supposed to get this thing home in the airplane?
Good
and
call.
And he had a good plane. It went in the overhead bin. I think you should definitely get your groomsmen or your maids of honor, your bridesmaids, a gift of some sort. Wedding favors for the guests. What does that mean? Like at your
wait, is it a 6-year-old birthday party or is it a wedding? Because I've never heard of wedding favors. I've heard of birthday party favors.
Well, I've seen a few weddings where there's something waiting for you on your table. It could be like a little gift for coming to the wedding.
Like what? I've never heard of that. I don't think that's proper.
I know. I've seen them at weddings before, and you sit down at your table, and there's a little thing for Mr. and Mrs. Pabst. And it could be like, I don't know. I don't look at them. I'm waiting for the bar to open up again.
I've never heard of that, and I think that's a little gauche.
Yeah, I don't think you need to do wedding favors for all the guests. That seems a lot of extra expense and work, Nate Miller. Next question was Brendan Summers. My girlfriend's birthday and our anniversary is on the same day. It's coming up. You know, who's the caller there, Josh?
We got Nate from Denver is on the line.
All right, now let's take Nate's call. Nate, what do you got, buddy?
Hey guys, love the show. Thanks for
now,
having
are you
me
the
on,
are so. You the one who's getting married?
I am. Yep, I was tweeting you guys earlier today.
Okay, so here's the deal. We just went over it. Yes, you should definitely get something for your groomsmen, something cool, something they'll actually use. I like flasks that are personalized. If your bros drink a little whiskey or something like that, you give them a flask and make sure the flask you give them actually has whiskey in it or a product in it when you give it to them. I think that's the move.
Ooh,
now, when
great.
You say wedding favors great. For the guests, both Andrew and I do not think you and your girl have to make wedding favors and place them at the table for the guests. Right, Andrew?
Oh, yeah. I've been to many weddings, never gotten a gift. And I don't think that's like part of the wedding etiquette. Do you know something different?
It's been a long time since we got married. What kind of pressure are you getting, Nate?
So the weddings we've been at recently, we have gotten a gift such as like a little plant or maybe a little bag of candy, just something little that says, you know, thanks for coming, almost all of them. And our family is really putting the pressure on us to get something little for everyone. But we've already spent everything on this, you know?
Right. You know what, man? I'm going to say no. You don't want to do it. I could tell by your voice. Don't succumb to public pressure because all of a sudden you spend another $600 on these favors that you can't afford. The farther you get away from your wedding, the more you're going to say, like, man, I'm glad I didn't overspend in this and that because I actually need some money for my life to live. So do what you want to do at your wedding. That's my biggest piece of advice, not what other people think you should do.
All right. I appreciate it, boys. Love the show. Yeah, can't wait to hear
I hope
more.
I didn't screw it up. I hope we didn't screw it up for you. Call us after the wedding, okay?
All right. I'll let you know how it goes.
Thanks, bro. All right. Let's go back to the other one, Perloff. My girlfriend's birthday and our anniversary on the same day. It's coming up. How much did I screw up? Do I get her a gift for each occasion? Help. Signed, Brendan Summers.
So, first of all, Brendan is a genius. He got married on his girlfriend. Wait, he said his anniversary and birthday.
Yeah, right. My girlfriend's birthday and our anniversary.
Our anniversary of what?
Dating?
Oh, come on. That's so lame. I heard anniversary, thought they were married, and I'm like, that's a brilliant move. You kill two stones, kill two birds with one stone.
Yes.
Imagine if you got married and your girlfriend's birthday was February 14th. Then you only need one gift.
Right. So, yes, because that would be ideal, because then you could cut down your cost per gift ratio.
You know, I have a similar problem. My wife is married. Her birthday is February 23rd. Valentine's Day is February 14th. We usually get back from the Super Bowl February 1st, all present occasions.
Right.
So I try to sort of combine. You could get away with combining things, right?
Yes and no. You can't get one gift that covers both birthday and anniversary or birthday and Valentine's Day. You have to get the gift for the birthday, but you have to do something nice for her for Valentine's
Day. No, but if I don't come back from the Super Bowl with a gift,
right,
I'm in trouble. That's the first sign of trouble.
And it doesn't matter even what the gift is, as long as you present them something to open sometimes.
Yes. I mean, the card is huge. We've gone over this. You need to get the card. But I'm telling you, I don't have to spend as much on the birthday if I've already done the post-Super Bowl.
That's fair.
And the Valentine's. So, and I think you want to invest early because by the time the birthday comes out, she's like, listen, this is getting expensive. This is our money. I don't really want to spend any more.
It's great advice for the men and women out there. Let's go back to Brendan Summers, his problem. My girlfriend's birthday and our anniversary. If she's your girlfriend, you don't have an anniversary. Just because you've been dating for 2 years doesn't mean you have an anniversary. Until there's a ring on her finger and your finger, that's when you start having anniversaries. You don't get the man or woman in your life a gift for the anniversary if you're dating.
But if you know that's the anniversary, maybe you ought to pop the question. They sound pretty serious.
Okay, fine. We're not telling you to pop the question. Not pop the question, but yeah, maybe you do it that day and it's her birthday as well.
But now that you have to get a gift for everybody who comes to your wedding, I don't know if you even want to pop the question. I'd elope. Just elope. Just, you know what? Instead of getting a birthday present or this faux engagement present or faux anniversary present, just elope tomorrow.
That's one of the smartest things you've ever said. If I had a do-over, I would take my fiance and go to some remote island, get married, and come back and just have a nice party.
Yeah,
a big party.
Great.
But that costs like, you know, $5,000 instead of $25,000.
Yeah, now it'd be $5,200, but you got to get M&Ms for everybody too.
Ugh, personalized M&Ms, little man M&Ms and women M&Ms.
Or like a little plant. How lame is that? We are about to tip off at Oracle Arena for Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Looks like Klay Thompson will be playing for the Warriors. Phew. Andre Iguodala still out. Kevin Love, not suspended by the NBA. He'll be in for the Cavaliers, who will try to recover from last game's total debacle, J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith says he's a veteran and he can overcome this. Luckily, it was him and not one of the young guys. I don't know about that.
Isn't it funny that J.R. Smith may be the only person on earth not bothered by what he did in the other day?
You could. Exactly. You know, he came out in overtime and canned a three. I'm like, where was that three-pointer when they needed it?
They always say it's healthy to not let things bother you and grind on them. I don't think this is the case. I don't think that you should be not upset at all that you screwed up big time on a huge stage for your team. I think it should bother you, and it's healthy that it bothers you.
Of course, to some degree, but you do have to move on. The funny thing is, everyone said after it happened, people are like, this has happened before to other times in the NBA. Like that time, it was J.R. Smith who did it against the Knicks. it was that time J.R. Smith. Like 3 out of 8 times this has ever happened was J.R. Smith. So, but Paulie, you know, he's not played well. Maybe this will be the thing that will make him more. He's really had not a good year and not a good playoff. So maybe this will wake him up.
Leisureman approved, not approved. If you had a magic wand, it can make one of two things happen. This is going to tell me a lot about it, you. You could put a spell on J.R. Smith that makes him score 33 points and hit the game winner tonight and totally redeem himself for at least one night.
Okay.
Or you can have him double down and make a mistake, like a B-level mistake tonight that costs his team again in a clutch situation, and it actually becomes worse. Be honest, if you could make that happen.
So are you asking me as, like, for content?
For content and what type of person you are. Are you dark and mean?
I really don't. I don't want to see J.R. Smith score 33 points. I'm not a big J.R. Smith fan.
Right.
I don't think most. I don't know anyone who is a J.R. Smith. Do you know anyone who's like, I love the NBA and I really like watching J.R. Smith play?
I would guess some of his family members. a handful of his family members like him personally.
Oh my gosh. Darren Revelle had a tweet today. Did you see Revelle's tweet on J.R. Smith? It was his high school yearbook page. And his quote was, "Get chicks or die trying." That was J.R. Smith. Earl J. Smith Jr.'s senior quote was,
wow.
"Get chicks or die trying." He's very funny. He's very unusual. He doesn't seem affected by other people. So maybe he can recover from this. They kind of need somebody to hit a three-pointer. So J.R.'s got a great chance, I guess.
Now, Rob Gronkowski, when he went to high school, a little sidebar here, he was asked his interests. Like, you know, they have a thing in your yearbook. They had a picture of Gronk, and they asked you a couple things. Robert Gronkowski, number 50. He was on the basketball team. So his little basketball bio on this page in his high school yearbook. Parents, Gordy and Diane Gronkowski. College choice, University of Arizona on a full athletic scholarship. Hobbies, working out, playing sports, chicks. That's his yearbook photo.
Oh, man. Okay. Let me jump in with a Leisureman approved, not approved. By the way, we didn't fully introduce this groundbreaking segment where we take a story. And what do we do with it, Paul?
Well, you give a side of it. You give like a warm take about it. And you get to see if the other person approves it and rides along with you or denies it and goes against you. We're about 2 years into this, but you could see other shows. Yeah. It's bleeding in other shows.
Okay. I have one that's a bit selfish. And we can get back to the finals in a second. But LeBron James. Leisureman approved, not approved. He's going to stay in Cleveland now because the other options are slowly drying up. Philadelphia with this Brian Colangelo thing and the GM problem might get fired any day now. I think this Twitter debacle is going to scare LeBron away from Philly. So if you take out Philly, really the only options, according to Vegas, are Houston and the LA Lakers. I don't think the Lakers are ready for another year. I don't think LeBron thinks that either. And I think Houston has too many problems. Harden and Paul need the ball in their hand. So I think going back to Cleveland is the most likely right now.
Approved. Mostly approved. I don't think Philadelphia makes any sense because I don't think the two young players want to play with him. If I'm Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, I don't want him dominating everything. We're just getting our team together, and we are the focal points, and we're going to give that up for 2 years for LeBron James? No.
Ben Simmons, they share, I believe, an agent. I think Ben Simmons is kind of represented by LeBron's company.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean what he truly wants.
And yeah.
With Houston, from a basketball standpoint, I don't understand that one at all. If you watch that game, Harden is like junior LeBron. They just give him the ball and stand around a lot in games, and their play is spread the court and let LeBron do it. That's half of the Warriors, or half of the Rockets' offense is stand around and let James Harden make something happen because it's usually good. That's basically what the Cavs are doing these days.
Well, LeBron's not young, though. Maybe he could move off the ball and let Harden do a lot of the work.
What's he going to be, a guy who chips in with 18 and 7?
No, you can still get 25.
You can't ask someone to change the way they play basketball at this point in their career who's an A player. Like when Carmelo Anthony went to Oklahoma City, he still expects to get the ball and just dominate, and he can't do it anymore.
Well, we all knew that was not going to
happen. I didn't see that at all.
By the way, it seems like Paul George could now leave OKC, leaving them with just Russell and Carmelo. Man, that did not work out.
The only other option, I think, for LeBron, again, is the Los Angeles Lakers because of two reasons. There's not a young player there that has the cachet or the career at this juncture that could even bat an eye that LeBron's coming to town.
Yeah, that's true.
That franchise could use a boost to take over that town again, which it hasn't had since Kobe left, or even 2 years before Kobe left.
Yeah. Maybe you bring Paul George, too, and you combine. You get a little veteran with the young guys there.
Right.
Do anything for you?
Yes, it does. I don't know about Paul George, but maybe. But here's what I always like to look at this from, like, what would I be thinking if I were LeBron James? He may look at Kevin Durant and say, man, if I go to a favorite and win, it does nothing for me. Mm. Kevin Durant is not being helped by jumping onto a bandwagon and just riding along to a title. He helps him, of course. But I think if you go to the L.A. Lakers and do something special there, that adds to your resume.
Yeah, but why on earth LeBron went to Miami, the most loaded team in the league, and then he went to Cleveland and got some talent around him? Why do you think that he'd have a shot in L.A.?
Because he did it before Miami. When he went to Miami, he owned that town in 3 minutes. He went from being a Cleveland Cavalier to the face of Miami sports in 10 words.
But I'm saying he had two Hall of Fame caliber players around him. He's got nothing with the Lakers. I don't even know how are they even a top three seed in the West?
But if he goes there, and if he goes there quick, let's say he goes there real quick after the series is over, and all of a sudden, it's not going to be hard to get people to follow you to L.A., just like it wasn't hard to get...
Who are you going to get to follow besides Paul George? Who's the other guy?
I don't know if you want Boogie Cousins. I don't know if you want someone like that.
If you have
that.
Boogie Cousins, you might as well just not even...
not play next year?
Oh, I mean, look at the Pelicans. The day Boogie Cousins went out, they improved by 300%.
Maybe you trade for Klay Thompson, whose dad played for the L.A. Lakers, and I always think Klay Thompson will end up being a Laker.
I don't think the Warriors are not going to... I don't think Thompson's up, but the Warriors will never trade to the Lakers.
Probably
that's not going to happen. You know, look at the team now. You got Julius Randle, probably not there long term. Kyle Kuzma is a nice young player. Is he ready to compete at that level?
No, but I mean,
maybe.
Well, I mean, the Lakers roster, even though it's young, it's not horrendous. And LeBron proved that he can take an average roster and get them places in the East, of course.
Then they got the Lonzo Ball situation.
That's
a situation, Paul.
Man, it's too bad because I've watched a lot of Lonzo Ball this year. And I love his ball skills and mm-hmm. his vision, but unfortunately he doesn't know how to shoot a basketball, which is necessary in that sport.
Well, he did shoot 40%, 41%, I think, from three in college.
But he shot 45% from the free throw line in the pros, which is, I'm telling you, Andrew, I can't shoot a lick, and I could shoot 45% from the free throw line.
Yeah, but there are a lot of players who've improved a lot. He's very young. You know, he's only 20 now. There are a lot of guys. Karl Malone went from 50 to 80. It's not, and also, the other thing is he shot 30% from three and, 36% from the field. He's not that bad a shooter.
Leisureman approved, not approved. LeBron has already won this playoffs by taking a team that everyone thinks stinks, whether they do or not, and whether you say, like, well, they stink because they can't play their game with LeBron, which are some of the criticisms that people go deeper. LeBron's already won this playoffs. This goes down as a positive in his career. This playoffs, no matter what happens the next
Absolutely.
Week.
Yeah, no, it was a Herculean feat that he got this team through. I mean, I do think that it wasn't the greatest competition. He faced Boston without their two best players
right.
who were injured.
He also got subverted. What's the word I'm looking for? He got off track in
side-track?
Game one. Not sidetrack. He didn't lose game one in any way. He did everything right, and one of his teammates, Jarrett Smith, gets totally the blame for them not picking up the game one win. LeBron doesn't even get a whiff of blame.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think he even needs to. I think he already got a positive check, whatever happens
right.
in these finals. It's been a great run, and he's really played amazing. I think he's a little bit relaxed because he knows he's the only guy who can do it, so he's shooting out of his mind.
Right. You got another one? I got two
yeah,
more.
Yeah, okay. Leisureman approved, not approved. The fickle NBA nation right now kind of thinks Steph Curry is the MVP of the Warriors, not Durant. That's what I'm hearing and reading the most. Approved, not approved.
Approved, and this bothers you and I because we are big Steph Curry guys.
Oh, I love him.
I think he is the second best player on earth, second most entertaining player on earth, second best at basketball. I don't care about his defense in any way because he's going to outscore anyone he's covering. I like James Harden. I don't love James Harden.
Yeah, Harden had a pretty good year. You're right.
Unbelievable year, yeah. But I still think that Harden has a game that's more selfish than Curry's. Curry can lay out for minutes at a time and not shoot. But then when he gets hot, he's like, okay, everyone, calm down. I'm going to take this and just give me the ball anywhere on the court.
That's well said. He can be in the flow and hog the ball in a weird way.
Right. He doesn't dominate until it's time to. Like yeah. And Durant's different. Durant has been, like you said, slowing down the game, slowing down the Warriors' pass mentality.
Last year he fit in perfectly. By the way, JaVale McGee just had a dunk, a wide open dunk. That's all JaVale McGee does. It's just starting up in Oracle Arena. I don't know why they don't play JaVale McGee, but that's besides the point.
Golden State up 4-0 early, on pace to win 112-0, if I do my math right.
Yeah. All right, you got another approved, not approved?
Approved, not approved. The impact of the Las Vegas Golden Knights run to the Stanley Cup means it's going to be a cakewalk for other leagues to get a team into Vegas now.
Okay, well, NFL is coming with the Raiders.
Right, and so it's already coming, and it's going to be sped up.
Yeah, so the big ones, NBA and MLB, and I agree with it. It's a cakewalk.
And fans will buy tickets in luxury boxes for the new Vegas football team because it's only 8 games a year. Hockey is, what, 41 home games a year?
Yeah.
8? They're going to sell this place out a dozen times. We were worried about that. The NBA should... is there a team you'll move there or is it an expansion?
Well, actually, I think Silver said yesterday that they're not going to expand right now. I don't know if that's the market. Seattle is in a problem for
don't
the NBA.
Do the Maloof brothers still own the Sacramento Kings?
No.
That's a long time ago?
I think they've been out of that for a while.
That's too bad because those boys would love to move Sactown right down to Vegas.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're out of that. No, they are. Remember they had the Real World suite?
Sure.
But wait, okay, I'll give you a choice, Paul. You get Vegas or Seattle to put, you get one NBA team.
Wait.
Where are you going to put them? You have an expansion team. Adam Silver calls you, said, I'm going to give you a team, Paul. You get to put them in one city, but I'm only giving you Seattle or Las Vegas.
If I'm Adam Silver?
No, if you're Paul Papps and you are given the team, where do you want it?
In my heart, I would like to put it in Seattle. That fan base lost their team right when they got Kevin Durant. They had Durant for like a year, which is just so painful. And, you know, they would have had Harden and Westbrook in Seattle for like a four or five-year run. I'm not putting in Seattle as a businessman. Las Vegas is white hot right now. Gambling is white hot right now. You have to put an NBA team in Vegas. All right, Leisureman approved, not approved. When I'm going to give you 5 seconds to think about it.
Okay.
What would be the NBA team most likely to move to Vegas?
Wow. This is tough. What is a small, maybe Portland? No, Portland, they love
them. No, they have
there.
A great fan base.
Town.
Atlanta Hawks?
No, it's too much history? No, it's just too big a city. They can't lose. The NBA can't lose Atlanta. I guess Charlotte or Memphis.
Memphis?
I know they love them, but it's just not as big a city.
They do love them. I think they're going to have to build another franchise.
Yeah, that's what they were asking about, expansion. If they'll go, how many teams are there in the NBA? 30?
I still think Sacramento can move.
By the way, Seattle is a huge, wildly popular town, too. It's not
Yeah.
I mean, it's growing. The fastest growing cities are usually Seattle, Portland, and anything in Texas.
All right, last one. We got about a minute left coming up. We're going to talk a little hockey, a little about your Golden Knights and my Washington Capitals. But before we wrap up this segment, the other night I spent 25 minutes online looking to watch the Hamilton Tiger Cats preseason game so I could watch Johnny Manziel.
Did you find it?
I did. I'm in Rhode Island. I'm not that computer savvy, as you know. It took me about 25 minutes to get online and find the right feed and whatever I had to get approved and blah, 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 blah. And if Leisureman approved, not approved, Johnny Manziel is still fascinating whether you, no matter what you think of him off the field.
100% approved. Throw me a text. I can't believe I remembered it was on, but I didn't watch. Well, we learned a lot tonight on the Leisureman, including It's McLovin's birthday, not the real McLovin's birthday. It's the McLovin from his fake ID and Superbad. Paul, is it about time we moved on from my nickname McLovin on the Dan Patrick Show?
I don't really call you McLovin. I think I call you Andrew, and I like Pearl. I mean, yeah. Your last name's Perloff. That's a solid nickname, Pearl. It's cool. Sounds like you could be a Sting.
It's got like a basketball connotation. You know, I was Pearl my whole life.
Right.
The name Perloff, it's pretty natural. So was my brother, was also Pearl. Then McLovin has nothing to do with me.
You know, I feel weird. I've never had a nickname. Do you know that?
Paulie doesn't count?
It's just an extension of Paul. It's not a nickname.
You've never had one?
No.
I mean, PBR?
PBR, I don't really think, because that's a play on my name. It's not something I earned.
But people don't call you, hey, PBR, what's up?
Yeah, double P, PBR. I heard that a little bit in college, but that doesn't do much for me.
Oh, you know, we call you PP at the studio sometimes.
That does nothing for me either.
No, it's
maybe not. I should be careful what I ask for.
Yeah, nothing good is going to come with the nickname, Paul. It's too late.
Thanks for listening to Leisureman Podcast. Don't forget the midweek podcast. Go to art19.com and Leisureman Podcast on Apple Podcasts to get them all downloaded. Peace.